Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, check the show notes. I'm sure we're going to have a review or two and maybe some fun movie and TV news, but we're really here for our horror sequel movie battle royale. Welcome to prime time, bitches. My name's Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
So if you were to get me something for my birthday, a hooker on Sunday, especially on the Lord's Day, would be perfect. And not one of those El Cheapo hookers, like the ones that you can get at a gas station or a lot lizard or one of the bucket bunnies that I've been hearing so much about. I've seen some of them. They're not bad. But, you know, it is on Sunday. It is my birthday.
So you want a classy escort.
Can I introduce to everybody else or are we just going to?
No, we're going to talk about that John has requested Lord Little John from his brothel.
Right.
All right. His brothel. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Troy Heinrichs.
What's up, everybody?
Okay, go ahead. Continue, John. Make it all about your birth week. Month.
Okay, you just took all
it's
the fun
It's his birth
out of it.
Month. It's his birth year. It's all about John.
I haven't had a birthday of my own in 14 years, so this is the first time I get to have the
how
birthday
you,
of my own.
I don't understand how you don't have a birthday
He's
of your own.
Shared sure. around the time with other people. We probably should not bring that up, Aaron.
Okay.
Sensitive subject?
You're right. Let's just have a half a story for people. So they're just sitting around and they're done with this podcast going, what the happened? Hey, you know what? On a more positive, Angela Lansbury passed away. There, we'll change
How is
the subject.
That positive?
She had a good life. She had a great career. That's okay. Positive. She had a wonderful.
So we're honoring her.
Why can't we celebrate when icons pass away and we can celebrate them? I don't think that's a negative thing.
Don't we celebrate when anybody passes away? It's like, man, it was so great that they were here.
Well, wait a minute. How old was she when she passed?
96.
She was older than the Queen, but not as old as Betty White.
Which means that USA is now 2 points ahead of England.
Right.
But for some reason, their funerals are going to last 3 times as long. I don't understand.
Yeah, like the that 73-year-old man doesn't get his new job until May 6th.
Can you imagine spending...
Is he going to live till then?
Hang on. Can you imagine spending your whole life waiting for that job? That's like so many people in middle America. I'm waiting for that promotion. I'm going to hang in there for 27 years. And then, bam, you get it. You're 73. You know you're only going to have it for a few more years. That sucks. And his kids are just probably, you know, Game of Thrones.
I don't
coffee.
Feel bad for him. He sucks.
He's getting a little herbal tea. A little extra.
Which part of the royal family is sleeping with which part of the royal family in order to keep this thing together?
Well, some things we should mention. So some Disney movies changed their release dates in case you're wondering. Blade lost their director, so that movie's being paused. So that release is going to move from November 2023 to September 6, 2024, which is where Deadpool 3 was. Now that's moving to November 8, 2024, which pushes Fantastic Four to February 14, 2025, and Avengers Secret Wars move from November 2025 to May 1st, 2026, all because the Blade director didn't work out. Get Wesley Snipes, let him direct this and make it a perfect circle.
I don't think we're going to make it that far, man.
All I heard was that we have to suffer through phase 4 for 2 more years.
No, phase 4 is done. Phase 5 is coming.
Can we also just notate that, and I apologize for how I'm going to pronounce his name, but Bassam Tariq is the director who exited.
That's Amanda at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Quite a ripple effect on all these other productions.
He did.
Like, he did. Seriously, a lot of things were affected by that.
I think it's pronounced Rappel.
What?
I think it's pronounced Rappel.
Again, Amanda at the Hollywood Outsider. And if he's wrong, John at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or our John. We're not even sure which he is.
I don't even know either. You all can figure it out. I might check it. I might answer you back. Probably not.
Actually, I think his name is called Smartest Man Alive. Because he's the only person that's ever been able to screw over Disney.
Oh, boy.
How about that TJ Miller who's going on the circuit? This guy who was like called in a bomb threat and he had sexual harassment charges.
A fake bomb threat. It's not like he really tried to save people.
Yeah, whatever it was. And, you know, he got fired from another show because of his behavior. But now he's going on Adam Carolla and he's like, I'm not going to work with Ryan Reynolds again. As if it was
an option.
He
doesn't like me.
He was literally already fired. Like, what is this? Is not the opposite of quiet quitting? Is that what he's doing? I don't know. God, that guy.
No, I think he's just, I don't know what he's doing. What is he thinking?
He really tried to say that because Ryan Reynolds would continue to act in character on set of Deadpool,
insult him as Deadpool.
Yeah. And
as it Deadpool would do.
Yeah. And he would refer to him as Weasel or whatever, that as his character, and would make comments that were, I thought, pretty funny, sarcastically so. but he got a little sensitive about that and is bringing it up all these years later, right after all of his negative attention started to subdue and he's trying to get his comedy back on the road. It's not coincidental timing at all, I'm sure.
Hey, I think he's a funny guy, but I'm going to be honest. I want to be friends with a guy who is beloved by Hugh Jackman and hated by T.J. Miller. That's the guy I want to be friends with. Because T.J. Miller might be funny, but he seems like a douche. Seems. Appearances. I'm not him. I don't know him. Appearances-wise.
Based on his news.
Yeah, T.J. Miller always seemed a little Asperger-y to me.
Oh, yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but...
No, there's a lot wrong with it. I mean, if you're calling in fake bomb threats, I don't think that's a positive.
I don't think that has anything to do with Asperger's either, to be fair. I think that's just douchebag activity.
I thought he was just saying, calling him an Asperger, not... Or Asperger. I don't know what he was saying.
Not actually referencing the disease.
Completely lost my train of thought on that. Oh, my God.
Is it a disease or is it a...
it's a condition. A mental illness.
Hey, nobody's got their PhD. Well, actually, you have a degree. Never mind.
I don't have a PhD, though.
No, but you have a degree in psychology. Is that part of psychology?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I guess you might want to shut up, John.
I have OPP.
You have a what? A GoPP?
Yeah, you know me.
OPP. Yeah, you know O-P-P. Me.
Never mind. Amanda.
John's got to go to the restroom.
No, that's not what that means.
I know you, John. It's all good.
Somebody's got me.
A lot of people out there are saying that Blockbuster wasn't great because it's not cool anymore because Netflix has a new show coming out in November and it's cool to trash what is or was popular. I want to know, what are your memories of Blockbuster? Because this new show is coming out on Netflix. Did you like Blockbuster? I worked there for 2.5 years. I loved Blockbuster.
If the show doesn't smell like a Blockbuster, it's not worth it.
Hey, Dick, what does a Blockbuster smell like?
Like popcorn and candy and joy?
Yes.
Unicorns
exactly.
And happiness?
Yeah.
Okay, you're telling me you never walked into a Blockbuster and you were like, ah.
The faint scent of aroma of VHS tapes. Delicious. Yeah.
I taste selection.
Yeah.
Selection. I taste rental fees.
I'm telling you, a Blockbuster had its own smell to it. That's one of those things that stuck with me.
That's the most bizarre
thing
I've ever heard.
Maybe it was your Blockbuster. Where did you go? Where did you have a Blockbuster at? Was it in the funky, smelly part of town?
It was in Florida where everything's a little funky smelling.
See? That's true.
Because I worked in one for 2.5 years. No problems. No.
John, that's probably mildew and mold from water.
It's just like when you have no problems with cats and dogs in your house, and then you're the one that's been living there for so long, and then your friend comes over and goes,
it's not cats and dogs.
What the hell
it's
is that smell?
Cats.
No, yeah, it's dogs too.
No, I cat smell. I can't do cats.
I can do dog smell.
Point is, if you have pets and you live with pets, you don't smell the pets. It's when your friends come over and go.
My brain goes right to Fritos whenever it comes to dog smell.
Truly.
Anyhow.
Didn't we start with a Blockbuster conversation?
The problem with Blockbuster
is, though, Aaron,
Troy's been trying to say.
Can we rewind? Stop and rewind.
Well played. Go ahead, John.
Okay.
Finish your thought.
So, Aaron, you sit there and say that you don't smell it because worked at a Blockbuster for 2 years.
2.5.
That's called nose blindness.
6 months.
No, it's not.
That's what I was just saying. I was just saying that.
Well, you never
no
got to.
No one cares, Troy.
The point of the Blockbuster is that the Blockbuster basically overtook everything. So it really pushed out a lot of fun video stores where people actually cared about movies. The problem with Blockbuster is that anytime you wanted to go see something on a Friday, it was never in stock because someone got there earlier in the day because you had to work during the day or you had to go to school during the day. So you couldn't get there until like 5 o'clock on a Friday night. And so everything was already rented out. So you had to go rent some old curmudgeon-y thing or something that was like on your B list that you wanted to watch. And the people were so pissy on Fridays because it was so busy that nobody wanted to have a conversation with you. If you went like on a Tuesday in the middle of the day, then the movie nerds were there and they were able to have a conversation with you about the things you want to do. I much preferred my local video store, which was like also next to the liquor store and the candy store and the pop store, because I could buy my snacks. I could buy my movie. Yes, there was a back room and it was awesome because the people knew you.
I was going to say, they knew you from like trying to sneak into that beaded curtain back room.
They're like this creepy teenager.
You do have that look. You got that back room
his
curtain.
His pants
look.
Are a little too loose when he comes out of the room.
He comes in there and he's just standing there and they can like he's standing next to the beaded curtain that is the back room and that beaded curtain's making so much noise that he's just trying to like
flapping.
Blindly grab around the corner to see what they have as close to the corner as possible. No, I get it. I'm there with you, man. I only know it so well because I was always lookout.
Yeah, you were the guy that was in there. So I was.
Those guys were invested because they had to buy the movies. It was like $100 a movie.
I want to retort some of your nonsense. So the best time to get a movie at Blockbuster was when all the big titles were out, because that's when you find the gems. That's when you go and you talk to the people that worked there, and that happened every single time I worked, every shift, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever it was. And that's when you have conversations and be like, oh, that's not in? Well, here's one that's like it. Here's another title, da-da-da. All this nonsense about they didn't have anything but the major titles is bullshit. I worked there for 2.5 years. They had a great catalog. Now, yeah, there's some really tiny obscure movies they might not have had, but they had a good catalog. It's just because they became super popular and a conglomerate, and that's why everybody hates them, and because of the late fees. And yeah,
no, the late fees are valid. Like, if you don't finish it on
people,
time,
boy, did they throw a fucking tantrum over them. Oh, they were, God, they were such babies over the late fees. They would just have the biggest fits over. There was a local, you want to hear a stupid story? I hope he's listening, jackass. So there was a guy, he's a local radio host.
Call his name out.
Still is. Steve.
Steve.
Shh. Oh.
Damn. Doxed city.
Yeah. Shh. So he had a deal, right? He had a deal because he was a local celebrity. Come on, whatever. But I guess back then, radio was a big deal. And, you know, when people still listened to him and they didn't just listen to podcasts. And so he had a deal where he had free rentals.
What?
He had free rentals. The only deal was he had to pay for late fees. He would bring him back a month late. Like a...
That's rude.
Fill in the word. And then he would throw the biggest tantrums if we tried to apply those fees to him. He would refuse to pay them because he was, and I quote, Steve Blank. Because I'm gonna edit out where you said the name. Yeah. So that's a true story. I'm like... Just pay. Never once did he ever pay his late fees, ever. And I'm sure he'll claim he didn't. No, he did not. He made he threw a tantrum and asked for a manager every single time. Those are the people that suck, because other people weren't allowed to rent anything until they paid their late fees. Some people bought movies 6 times over because they decided it was really important to keep Harold and Kumar for an extra year.
I don't know where Troy is coming from with this perspective that Blockbuster sucked, but my experiences were more than fond. I recall every week being excited to go to the Blockbuster. I did not have the smells that John had. There was a pizza place next door, so maybe that was my smell, was pizza. But I smelled, like I said, happiness and joy. And I would get to re-rent Poltergeist and Queen of the Damned. I could make those selections because they had both of them.
See? And Queen of the Damned couldn't have been popular because nobody saw it.
Absolutely
in the
theater. Not. Maybe after Aaliyah passed away or something.
Oh, yeah. Sad times.
Yeah. But I loved Blockbuster. I'm excited for the show to come out. It looks funny. And I still have a lot of respect for Blockbuster.
Don't get me wrong. I never want to go back to the concept of a video store. I like having eternal selections now. I think that's fantastic. I don't have to leave my house and I can watch whatever I want. And if you got streaming, there's too much content. But I do miss the days where you would wander around and come across. That's where I came across some great stuff. Charlize Theron, the first time I ever saw her was in a Blockbuster video. Was it Two Days in the Valley, I think is the name of the movie? Stumbled across it because I didn't have anything with Tarantino in. So I got something that looked Tarantino-ish.
Boom. Expand your horizons, Troy.
Well, I did expand my horizons after I got charged 3 times as much as what the price tag was up on the board for the fourth time.
Because late
seems like you didn't know.
No,
it seems like you didn't read.
It says the rental is $3 and on your receipt it's like $4.89. There's like state franchise tax and store tax and someone wiped the door down tax.
It was Chicago or something, because we didn't have that here. It was
the
just
number never matched what was up on the board. So I said, screw it, I'm gonna go over to Hollywood Video. And at Hollywood Video, I could also rent video games. And then I went to Family Video, where the people there actually knew your name and actually had conversations with you about film.
They had video games at Blockbuster.
Only after Hollywood did. Hollywood did it first.
I didn't time it. I just know that they had them. And we had tons
And they were never in stock because people didn't bring them back.
Okay.
Sounds like you just went to a bad Blockbuster.
Yeah, like
my guy, change it.
Your store sucked. But that wasn't the case for all of them.
How did this negate like millions of people's positive experience with Blockbuster? This whole time you're hearing everybody talk great and you're like, I hate my Blockbuster. They don't talk to me.
Dude that wrote the article, everything you wrote is exactly what I experienced at my place.
See, the worst thing you can do is have one encounter and assume that about everything. See? You never want to be. That's how bigotry starts, Troy. Don't fall down the well. Don't do
it. When you have one bad encounter, they're going to tell eight other people, and then eight other people are going to go to Hollywood Video or Family Video.
Trust me, Blockbuster was doing much better than Hollywood Video or Family Video. Although Family Video, I think, lasts a little longer because they were not, they didn't go crazy with the franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, here, better news. Hercule Poirot will return as Kenneth Branagh has assembled another awesome cast for A Haunting in Venice, which is set in eerie post-World War II Venice on All Hallows' Eve. It's a terrifying mystery featuring the return of, obviously, Hercule, now returned and living in self-imposed exile in the world's most glamorous city. Poirot reluctantly attends a seance at a decaying haunted palazzo, and one of the guests is murdered, and the detective is thrust into a sinister world of secrets and shadows. I'm just glad they're making another one.
He said thrust like it was Hercule Poirot.
I wonder if they're going to get Book back for this one.
Did you see the most recent movie?
I did. That's why I said it.
Okay. Just asking.
Aaron, are you familiar with this story? Because I know it comes from Agatha Christie and you're a big fan.
This one, I don't know. No, I don't know. I knew Death on the Nile and I knew Orient Express, but I don't know this one.
Halloween Party.
Yeah. I think it was originally like a kid's party or something. I don't know.
I'm excited to see where it goes.
I'm glad they're making another one because the other one had the hammer effect. So they were just trying to bury the movie and it finally came out and they're just like, all right, next. And I think it'll be a Hulu exclusive. Because that's the last we heard when Death on the Nile came out and they said they were going to do another one. They said it'll probably be a Hulu exclusive like Prey was.
Which was such a great one that I feel like great a lot movie. Of people still haven't found just because of that Hulu exclusivity. I feel like it's still kind of on the bottom of the totem pole in terms of streaming platforms.
Probably the best Predator movie since the first one.
Well, if the Netflix experience for The Glass Onion goes well, then I'm sure Hulu will be following suit and trying to get this in the theater as well.
Yeah, did we talk about that? I think it came out after the last episode, right?
I think so.
Glass Onion, The Knives Out Mystery, it's a sequel, is going to play for 1 week around Thanksgiving before it comes out on Netflix in December. So it will play in theaters for 1 week, which I've already got my tickets.
We already know the reasoning behind that, right?
Just to make money. But
Academy.
AMC, true, but AMC backed down. AMC is going to play it. Regal's going to play it. AMC was firm. They would never play Netflix. And they are doing it, but only because they agreed to an exclusivity window. So they get it for a week, and then it's several weeks before it hits Netflix.
Ah, I like that.
Ain't nothing wrong with that either.
Mm-mm.
People that would want to wait will wait, and people that don't want to wait will pay.
I've got tickets. I ain't waiting.
Or just get A-list, and then you pay $20, and you can see multiple movies in a month, including that
one. Ooh, that'd be interesting. Did you get your ticket based on A-list? Because this would be something that they could actually exclude from A-list, I would think.
Nope, it was there. I already got my tickets.
Aaron's nice. Like, I was on top of it. I can answer all questions.
As soon as the tickets went up, boy, I already had my seats. Oh, yeah.
Hold, please.
Troy's going to make a transaction right now. All right.
You're welcome, AMC.
I'm going to switch this because this was fabulous.
They already got my money. Don't need to thank them.
Amanda, you weren't here last week. You saw Hocus Pocus 2. You were supposed to be on. We're not going to do a whole review of it because it's a couple weeks now. But you did see this lady on TikTok, right?
The mom from Texas.
The mom from Texas.
Who made it onto the news.
Oh my God, it's amazing because she's...
It's so tragic.
Hang on, let me paraphrase here. She said on her little TikTok video, "Do not watch this film. Everybody thinks it's fake and innocent, but they could be casting any type of spell that they want to. Anything could be coming through that TV screen into your home. The whole movie is about witches harvesting children for blood sacrifices. A worst case scenario is... you unleash hell on your kids and in your home." And I would argue, lady, if you have kids, you've already unleashed hell into your home.
Have you looked at your walls? Where have they colored? Hell exists.
You get a black knight if you have a teenage boy.
Ew.
Wow. Sorry. That's too far.
Sorry. Amanda, so what do you think? Is this lady correct that blood sacrifices and...
First of all, they do not devour their blood. They devour their life source. That's very different. Very different things they're seeking from children.
And then do they run amok, amok, amok?
And then they run amok, amok, amok. Also, if you have watched this movie, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but if you've watched it, I really expected it to go in a very different direction, but they very much so Disney'd it. It has a very Disney ending.
Oh, this is Hocus Pocus 2. Did we say the movie? I don't know if I
said
that. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank God.
So obviously, I'm not going to tell you anything about it if you haven't seen it. If you have, you know what I'm talking about. But this is not, this is really not as dark as I was expecting. I thought it would be a little bit more. I feel like the first one was a little bit darker.
I disagree. I mean, it sounds like they could be casting any type of spell that they want to through your TV screen.
Yeah.
If Sarah Jessica Parker could do that, she would do a spell on herself.
Wow.
Do you mean get rid of the horse face?
Stop. Jesus. Is this movie good?
I think for non-Hocus Pocus longtime fans, yes. I think it's a new Hocus Pocus, new Hocus Pocus for a new generation. But for those...
we needed that.
I don't think we did. But for those that have been longtime fans of it and are probably older and went back because of nostalgia, it's not the same and it's not as good. It's kind of cheesy, like... Not Nick at Night, but what did Disney have? The late at night Disney movies or whatever.
I don't know. I don't watch them.
It just reminded me of that.
I just want to interject my hot take, because I did, for the fun of it, sit down and rewatch the original Hocus Pocus, because it had been nearly 20 years before I thought, hey, I want to waste an hour and a half of my time.
Whoa, shots fired.
You just said you wanted to watch it for fun.
Right. And so... I watched it. That's not a good movie.
Oh, my gosh. How dare you? How dare you? You're grounded. Get out of this podcast.
It's not really that good. Practical Magic's better.
Practical Magic is much better.
I didn't watch it because I didn't care. So
right.
You guys make me sad.
Hey, we're at least giving props to the witches. We're just telling you Practical Magic is a much better movie.
I think it's more important. You know what? Just go celebrate real witches. That's what you should do. Just go them and celebrate. They're
just go find them and then you burn them at the stake.
No,
watch the Salem Witch Trials.
You let
they
them.
Were hung, oh, I'm sorry. Not you hang burned. Them.
Exactly. That's why I don't understand why people don't get that. That's what happened. They were hung. They were not burned.
It's just from the saying.
It's just
I think.
Facts. You know, just like it's facts that they can cast a spell through your TV. Duh.
And we needed a TikTok mom to tell us about this.
Thank God she was there.
Thank God.
I didn't know, and then she told me, and I'm like, well, goddamn. Why aren't we making genius videos like this, man? We could be going viral. I'm just going to start talking about movies and just randomly, oh, Michael Myers, he's the devil. He's coming for your house.
Also, if you're worried about a Disney movie casting a spell on your children, you should probably be worried about the consumerism marketing that's being cast to your children through things
but that's fine.
Elsa and everything that gets all of your money as a parent.
Okay. Now you're just getting too real, and we don't need that right now.
We don't need that.
However, I would like to take about three steps back to Aaron doing crazy TikToks about different movies.
Yeah.
I think this is brilliant, and this will get us on the map of TikTok. I think Aaron should really just fuck his hair up and and then put his glasses on sideways and be like, I sat there and watched Michael Myers and I think he's a sexy man. And there you go. That's your whole TikTok right there.
Or he can just put on his ET theory and do that for all these different movies and they will go viral because people are like, what? I've never heard of that
just
theory.
Make every movie have a love
a
story?
Gay twist.
A gay twist right. Or an interracial right. romance. Okay.
So listen, E.T. really wanted to extend his neck up that boy's right.
Anyway.
My God. You're going to turn this into a charge. We're going to get charges because of this podcast episode.
Happened.
You better hope the FBI doesn't have this tapped looking for child predators.
All I heard was we're trying to make the new Pixar universe through E.T. and then E.T. is doing fornicative things.
Ouch. Right. Ouch.
Oh, let me get that with my light
Hang
up finger.
On. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Trainer Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at @buypopcorn. Amanda, you had something else?
Well, I feel like we should tell them maybe what episode we're referencing where you tell your ET story.
Oh, let's get controversial. It's a let's get controversial episode. I think it's on our TikTok, though. That story is on our TikTok.
It probably
is. That also
is.
Where you talk about the luck dragon?
Right, but it needs to be Aaron's face on it. That way that, because you can't do this whole thing unless it's going to be one of those
you just want me to look like Doc from Back to the Future? That's your plan?
So yes, that'll be brilliant.
So I tell you what.
I'm so confused. E.T. and Elliot are now role-playing with the face of Aaron on E.T.? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not.
What? Stop.
Where did you get that from? from.
All right. All right, Troy, you just totally screwed up this whole bit.
I'm going to go and do that for Halloween ends. It ends? Yeah, it's the last one. I'll do something. I don't know if it's going to be like a doc on Back to the Future. I will do a TikTok for my review of Halloween Ends, if I can figure out how to use TikTok properly. Amanda does it great. She made a popcorn video. It was like 40,000 views. Views just popped. Right. Mine's got 8 or something.
Well, you should totally have Amanda sit there and like hold the camera for you or something. Obviously. Or you should do like, you should get like the whole like circle light thing and a tripod. And I'm going to punch the microphone right now because it sounds like the right thing to do. Troy's going to throw his headset on the ground and walk away. You know, oh, Troy's got the circle light right now. So you and Troy, because you're within driving range, can get together and have this whole
Troy does have a circle light.
Look, I have one too, but not with me.
What is a circle light? I don't know what this is.
It's to help illuminate and give you the right light when you're doing videos and stuff.
Hey, we could, Troy, I know it's great that you're showing me this, but all you're doing is knocking the shit off your microphone.
He sounds like he's having sex with it.
with his light and the microphone, yeah. All right, well, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. If you'd want to support this show at this point, I don't know. I don't know where you are on it, but it's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now, we got to mention before we're going to talk about Amsterdam. We're going to talk about it quick because literally it's a huge flop, so nobody cares. But we're gonna mention it anyway because it's very important. Because there was a bet made a long time ago on this show.
Oh, God.
Sadly, it was not that long ago.
Sadly, sadly, it wasn't that long. Where Amanda and John made a bet to see who could win.
Well, we were challenged. They were challenged.
We made the bet.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
We were challenged by Nate Bruce.
They agreed to the terms.
This is Nate Bruce. This is Nate Bruce's challenge to us, which he wanted to know what would happen first. Would Amanda make it to 4 episodes of the show on time?
In a row.
Or would I be able to go see a movie in a movie theater? Now, for those who aren't playing the home game.
It was like 6 right. months ago.
It was those, not that the, long ago.
It was like 6 months.
It was no, like 2 months it, ago.
No, it was not.
That the bet four. Was made?
It was 4. It was 4.
Sorry.
Before
it
July.
Was
about
4. It was 4 months ago.
It was 4 months ago. Because it was at the beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
So, it was like June, I believe. So yes, 4. For those who are playing the home game and don't understand why this is such a big deal is that I am currently trapped in the mountains of North Carolina where there's absolutely nothing for me to go see in a movie theater. I don't even think there is a movie theater within 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. We start getting like to an hour, maybe I'll find a movie theater. That's why I don't go to the movies anymore currently in my current situation. So Amanda just had to show up to the show 4 times.
To be fair, Amanda's been moving a lot.
Amanda's got a lot of reasons. Yeah. Every week's a different reason.
Yeah.
But it's 4 months. 4 weeks in a row. That was it. That's it. And he beat you. He won. It's sad that it had to be Amsterdam, but he won.
It really is sad that it had to be Amsterdam, but I expect my hooker this weekend.
I don't know if that
was that, payment, I don't think that was part of the terms.
Yeah.
I'll get you a $20 one, but I can't promise anything more than that.
Hey, as long as the mouth still works, I'm all right.
You better hope that North Carolina has some good ones.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Do they offer this on like Uber Eats? Can I ever deliver to you?
Uber Eats. Something's getting ate. Oh. Anyhow.
Gross. Okay. In the 1930s, 3 friends witness a murder, are framed for it, and uncover one of the most outrageous plots in American history. This film was inspired by the Business Plot, a 1933 political conspiracy in which wealthy American businessmen and bankers plotted a military coup d'etat to overthrow President Franklin D. Roosevelt and replace him with a fascist veterans organization headed by U.S. Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler. Just so you know, don't worry. No allusions to anything else that's happened in politics recently at all. None.
He's being sarcastic.
Quite a bit. It feels like a documentary at times. Starring Christian Bale as Bert, Margot Robbie as Valerie, and John David Washington as Harold. The three of them are the three bestest friends trying to stop this plot. That also involves Robert De Niro, Michael Shannon, Mike Myers, Timothy Oliphant, and Taylor Swift. John, you and I both saw this. The tone from director David O. Russell is a bit all over the place, but I did really enjoy the trio of actors. Bale, in particular, I think, was giving it his all. So before we talk about the actual plot and the tone, what did you think performance-wise of Amsterdam.
Performance-wise, I believe everybody showed up giving their very best they could. Now, that is a double-edged sword because you have Christian Bale, who is just chewing on absolutely every single bit of scenery he possibly can. He is so big on the screen. He is at no point does he ever break the character that he's portraying. And every little mannerism was completely thought out. Then you have Margot Robbie, who shows up on the screen, who has like, she's just Margot Robbie. Like there's just something magical and incredible and engaging about her. And then you put them up against John David Washington, who up until now I've thought was pretty great. I've enjoyed him in just about everything I've seen him in. I thought he's amazing, but he was not bringing his best show to this in comparison to his
co-stars.
Cohorts. As
yeah, he was overshadowed quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit, man. I will say, like, Christian Bale is in a different movie.
Yeah, I feel he really is.
I feel like he showed up and he's like just showing his Oscar to everybody. Margot Robbie just illuminates the room whenever she walks in anywhere. I will say, flawless skin. It's she's a literal angel, just an angel. Mm-hmm. But Christian Bale, every scene he is doing everything he can to try to bring this movie up to where it should be, and it's just not working out. So, like, but acting-wise, it's great.
And he's thought of every single mannerism. Mm-hmm. It's incredible what he's done. It's, you know, everything has a story behind it, and that story sticks throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is so well planned out and thought. It really, like, as far as the acting itself is concerned, top-notch.
So what'd you think about the plot or the tone? Because to me, you know, here's what I thought. I enjoyed it for a while. But then the end turns into like an after school special, like those last 30 minutes, it just becomes this metaphorical hammer to the Trump administration. And I'm just kind of sick of feeling like that when I watch anything, because I just want to watch a movie and escape for a little bit. But it also felt like the tone was all over the place. It almost felt like it wanted to be a Coen Brothers movie at times. Mm-hmm. And then it wanted to be a straight up historical drama at times. And it just didn't know what kind of movie it wanted to be.
No, it really didn't. I was reminded of like Grand Budapest Hotel at some moments in it, which didn't fit the rest of the tone throughout the movie. So it really loses. Like, I really think that they should have sat back and tried to figure out what they were going to do with this.
Yeah, because right.
There were just moments where it just didn't piece together very well.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it goes from hijinks and just humor to very dark and serious to just ominous, and none of it really gels. Like, a lot of movies can capture all that and just gel. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? I say Coen Brothers because that's what it reminded me it was trying to do. It was trying to go for that kind of vibe and just never hit it, ever. Like I said, except for Christian Bale and Margot Robbie, those two walked out unscathed. Overall, though, man, I was just really disappointed. This movie's going to lose $100 million, they said. Because it flopped so hard. And, you know, I don't know why they spent as much on it as they did.
Well, I mean, you can see where they spent the money on it.
Sure.
It's definitely in the set dressing. There's the money, the costumes, there's the money. Taylor Swift, I don't think, shows up for anything less than $2-15 million.
I'm sure she was a little cheaper here because she's not a huge actress.
Maybe she was a little cheaper. But, you know, Mike Myers, this is one of the few times you get to see him come back to the big screen, and I thought he was incredible. Like, it was nice to see old school Mike Myers, like, completely lost in the character as well. Michael Shannon just shows up and he's like, "I'm Michael Shannon. Let me show you, you know, the best acting I ever did was Groundhog's Day when it came to wrestling." You know, that's all Michael Shannon's done.
He literally does this. I do not find him to be a great actor. I think he's the same guy in literally everything, and not a guy that I find engaging in everything.
Right. And Zoe Saldana was not used nearly enough, and Rami Malek wasn't as incredible as people seem to like to think he is. But Anna Taylor-Joy, on the other hand, was another one who, whenever she was on the scene with her co-star, let's say, I don't know, Rami Malek in this case, she was the one who was harder to take your eyes off of than he was.
Yeah. So if $10 is the full price for Mission, what do you give Amsterdam?
I'll give it $4.50.
I would concur completely. Any recent film or TV recommendations? Amanda, you saw the Mila Kunis movie, Luckiest Girl Alive, right?
I did.
How was that?
It was pretty good. So just to kind of give you an idea of what the movie is about, essentially this woman who kind of seems to have it all. Her name is Ani, played by Mila Kunis. She
was on Netflix too, right?
Yeah.
Netflix.
Yeah. She gets approached by a documentary filmmaker, and he wants her to share her side of the story of a tragic incident that happened when she was in high school. And she has never told her side of the story. So it's kind of been in everyone's mind of what she could say and what happened and what her perspective was, because she was villainized for what her quote unquote role was to play in this. And so she finally decides, you know, am I going to come forward or what am I going to do about this situation? And so she has a pretty big revelation in terms of how she wants to handle this and almost seeking justice for herself and redemption. But she's not always a likable character. And I guess in the book, because this is based on a book, she's even less likable. And so you'll notice that that's a little bit different if you're a fan of the book, just to kind of give you a heads up. So I really enjoyed it. It was one of the, you know, I think it's one of the films that I've enjoyed most out of this year, and it'll probably rank up pretty high for me in the past couple of years. It's totally up my alley, though, so I will give you a little bit of that. I'm a little biased because
I hear
this
a lot of
my
people raving about this one. So
I've heard some mixed reviews. I know some people who really liked the book, and I saw some comments in the Facebook group about this, that they were hesitant to even try the movie because they weren't a fan of the book. But based on what I've learned about the book.
That's why I don't read, man.
Based on what I've read about the book, the perception of this character is completely different, or mostly different for me from what I saw. So I would highly recommend you check it out. Just know that it is very sensitive. There's sexual assault and things like that. Gun violence.
All right. Troy, anything from you?
Nope. I've been sick.
John? Well, you saw Amsterdam. Anything else?
I saw Amsterdam. I did. I have to say the most recent episode of She-Hulk was a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. If I have to hear you talk about She-Hulk one more time. It's becoming right. Your Schitt's Creek.
It really is. Because I have been rewatching every single week. I rewatch the entire series.
I'll say if you get past the CGI, it's a great series. It's actually
really is a great series. Yeah. I got past the CGI, so I'm fine with that. Did anyone watch the new Netflix Mike Flanagan thing?
Midnight Club. No, I've got it queued for my camping trip. I'm going backpacking next week, so I'm going to watch all there while it's dark and ominous.
I have it queued for this weekend because my pop's going to be out of town, so I can sit down and watch
it. Wait, Amanda, did you say you watched it?
I watched the first couple episodes.
You're always saying, I didn't have time to do this, I didn't have time to do that. But suddenly, you always have time for like 16 episodes
of TV. I've been traveling a lot the past week. And so I've actually had time to sit down and watch stuff this past week.
I assume that means you're caught up on your BIF obligations then.
I'm getting closer. But if you're not familiar, it's about a manor with a mysterious history, and eight members of the Midnight Club meet each night at midnight to tell sinister stories and to look for signs of the supernatural from the beyond. Like John mentioned, it's from Mike Flanagan. It's got a pretty good cast. I've really enjoyed the tone and the chemistry between the cast, and I'm curious to see where and how dark this series will go. But I have really high expectations just because I've really enjoyed his work.
I've heard hardly anybody talking about this one.
I'm surprised. I haven't either. And I think it hasn't been promoted the same as some of the others.
Definitely not.
I did watch the penultimate episode of Rings of Power, and the finale is this Friday.
That was really good, too.
That was really good.
By the time it airs, it'll already be done.
I've only watched one episode of that. Oops. I forgot about it.
Is there one ring that rules them all? Is that what happens?
No. This is actually the story about how Voldemort comes to be.
We've talked about that one a lot, too. New stuff. Yeah. That was the whole point. New stuff. So we heard She-Hulk, Rings of Power. Yeah.
I also watched House of Dragon, and I stand by my statement that episodes 5, 6, 7 are way better than 1 through 5.
I disagree with you completely. Like, most of the world does. I don't know what to tell you.
Way better.
Most of the people I talk to prefer the earlier episodes. They like the younger actresses even better.
I do like the younger actresses for Alicent and Rhaenyra. I thought they were really good actresses, but the story is much better.
You're wrong.
Now that we're actually into the...
It's the same story. It's literally the same story. They had to tell that story. It's called backstory.
But there's a big break.
Aye, aye, aye. You know what? I want to talk about Easter Sunday. Home is where the crazy is. And stand-up comedy sensation Joel Coy's cinematic debut, Easter Sunday, the hilarious and heartfelt comedy Co-stars Jimmy O. Yang, Tia Carrera, and Tiffany Haddish, and is yours to own with never-before-seen extras, including hilarious deleted scenes and a gag reel. You can own it on digital today on Blu-ray October 18th. It's rated PG-13 from Universal Pictures Home Entertainment. I am a Joe Coy fan. I don't know if you guys have ever seen his stand-up. I think he's hilarious. He had his recent special had a great thing on CPAC machines, if you're somebody who has used one. I definitely recommend this as well, and this is a cast that deserves your support. Also, if you want a chance to win your own digital copy, we're giving 5 of them away. So to enter, just email at contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with your name and the subject line, Easter is a joy. And we'll draw our 5 winners from there and let you know if you won. Thanks. Easter Sunday. Check it out. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of its genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale. Okay, we haven't done a Movie Battle Royale in a long time.
Not since the last time Michael Myers showed up, probably.
Probably. It's been a while. So if you're newer to the podcast, we take our 8 choices for the topic. 4 have to come from a listener poll we do on Facebook, from a top 10 on Facebook, and we vote them down until we're left with 1 clear winner. And this one is as wide open as I've ever seen it from the listeners. So let's get into it. So what is the best horror sequel in history? And really take into account what is the absolute best one. No remakes or reboots are counted here. It has to be a sequel, but it can be any number from 4, 5, 6, whatever is the best sequel. There was somebody in our Facebook group who made the stipulation that a sequel is only the second one. After that, it's not a sequel. I don't understand that concept, but I guess he's probably trying to say it's just basically trying to mimic the second and third and fourth. Da, 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 da. It's any number after the first one is a sequel, as far as I'm concerned. Do we agree on this?
I concur.
Sure.
Cool. Okay, so before we get into finalists, were there any sequels that didn't make the cut that do deserve mentioning, John? Like from you, was there anything that didn't make the final 8 that you know of? Because we already know ahead of time what the final 8 are, that you wish would have gotten a mention.
Yeah, you know, I think Friday the 13th, the New Blood one, that one would have been a great sequel to follow
over
up.
Over the final chapter? You'd give New Blood over the final chapter?
Yeah.
Why?
There's something about the fact that you have this supernatural beast of Jason and you know, because he has to be supernatural because he comes back from the dead every single time. And so giving him something that is a supernatural combatant to deal with and something that's harder for him to deal with than anything else, I thought was just an interesting aspect to it and made the whole story so much cooler. So that's one that I would bring up. Also, American Werewolf in Paris, I think, is another one that'd be great to bring up.
I don't know about that one. I mean, I like New Blood a lot. I think that's and I really like the psychic twist, but I did not like American Werewolf in Paris.
Well, what I liked about what they screwed up is because it's definitely a 90s version of American Werewolf, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the beginning of CGI. It's the beginning, you know, and they're doing all this CGI werewolf.
Not enough practical
crap.
Effects, for sure.
Not enough practical effects. And they forget, like, the best thing about the original American Werewolf in London, which was the practical effect. That was one of the best on-camera practical effects werewolf and even digital werewolf you've ever seen. So I think the fact that they didn't do that really hurts the film, but it is definitely a continuation of the original American Werewolf and I thought that part was really neat.
I would also mention The Conjuring 2.
Damn you, Amanda.
Also, yes, actually Conjuring. That was another one that was on my list, as well as Paranormal Activity 3.
Oh yeah. That's a good pick too.
That one I think is better than the first one, because that was the one that actually, the first one I was like, ooh, that's freaky.
Is that the one with the Xbox? They had the Xbox Kinect in there or whatever?
No, that's 4. Okay. I think 3 was the one where they go back in time they go back into the 80s or early 90s where you see the two sisters when they're little kids.
Okay.
And you're dealing with their parents. And it's the one where, like, the freakiest scene in that one is when, like, there's that tremor and the dust falls from the house and you see all the dust fall on the shape of the monster that is sitting in the room that you can't actually see, but because the dust falls all over him, you kind of sit there and you start like, am I seeing something there? And then it kind of shakes the dust off of itself and walks out of the room. That was one of the freakiest things I've seen in a movie, and it was such an effective effect. So
I'd throw Exorcist 3 in there as well.
That's a great one. Yep.
I would also personally add Final Destination 2 and 3. They both had very memorable death scenes for me.
Well, nobody goes behind a logging truck ever.
I know, and that's from the second one. And the third one...
Actually, when I was in Seattle, I took a picture of the logging truck, and I made sure I was on the side and not behind it.
Yeah, you immediately have to leave. And the third one has a pretty crazy kill with the tanning bed, if you guys remember that one.
Yeah, that whole series is good.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would, one of my favorite sequels of all time, horror sequels, Fright Night Part 2. Unfortunately, nobody ever saw it. It was really sad. I love that movie, though. Julie Carmen was Jerry Dandridge's sister, and I'd have let her bite me wherever she wanted to. It was crazy. But I found a fun fact about that because I was like, that's the one movie I have to talk about. And so I'm just looking up fun facts about it. And what I found out was soon after the filming was wrapped up, Roddy McDowall and Fright Night creator Tom Holland were scheduled to meet with Live Entertainment chairman Jose Menendez to discuss making a third film, but plans died with Menendez, who was famously murdered by his sons.
Oh, wow.
And as a direct consequence of this, Part 2 ended up losing its planned countrywide distribution and playing only in one LA theater and another New York theater. And also directly resulted in its poor box office results. I remember seeing it in the theater, but it got a really low key release. And was very, very minor, and it was only out for like a week. It didn't do very well because of that. I remember it wasn't advertised well. I just remember seeing an ad going, there's a Fright Night Part 2? Because the first one was a hit. And so that's a fun, crazy fact.
That's really sad.
It is too. I love those movies. I love them so much. Okay, well, it's time. We break this into two divisions, all right? Ho North, which is Amanda and I, and Ho South, which is Jen and Troy. And we have to each sell our two movies. Remember, one of each of our two selections had to be picked from a listener top 10.
Yeah. Wait. Amanda moved, though. I think since we haven't done a bad movie, a battle royale in so long, we have to like reshuffle the deck of who's on whose teams here.
I was actually just thinking about that. Like, how am I the one who is still on Ho North when I live in Texas and I'm moving to Colorado?
Do you want to change this? Do you want to change this? Troy and I are Ho North and you and John are Ho South?
Sure.
Troy, are you okay with this?
I mean, that means that we might not get number one sometimes. You and I usually battle in the semis, and I don't want to have one of Amanda's dumb movies becoming number one.
You guys battle with your semis? Ew.
Stop. Okay, well, we're not going to do it for this time, only because for the editing purposes, I've already got everything set up for the way it is now.
Exactly.
But for future, we can do it. Yeah, future reference. Okay. So Amanda, sell your two and then take your vote.
All right, so my first one is Dawn of the Dead.
I don't know what else to do.
You're doing fine.
His leg is awful. The infection's spreading quickly. Can't we do something? Can't we take him to a med unit?
I've seen half a dozen guys get bitten by those things. None of them lasted more than 3 days.
This is the second in George Romero's slate of zombie films, and it released in 1978. If you're not familiar, it is about a horde of zombies that swarm over the U.S., and the terrified populace tries everything in their power to escape the attack of the undead, but neither cities nor the countryside prove safe. In Pennsylvania, radio station employees Stephen and his girlfriend Francine escape in the station helicopter, accompanied by two renegade SWAT members, Roger and Pete. The group retreats to the haven of an enclosed shopping center to make what could be humanity's last stand. Now, I have some fun facts about it, which hopefully should sell.
Wow.
Yeah, I came prepared, guys. I did research. That's what happens when you don't show up 4 weeks in a row.
Gives you plenty of time.
I know.
Yeah, she misunderstood the bet.
That's
show
like
up
the
for
opposite of showing up for 4 weeks in a row.
The special makeup effects were created by Tom Savini, whose work on the film led to an extensive career creating similar effects for other horror films. In post-production, Romero and Argento edited separate versions of the film for their respective markets. Argento's version features a progressive rock score composed and performed by his frequent collaborators Goblin, while Romero's cut primarily favors stock cues from the DeWolf Music Library. I'll just add a little note. The reason why I find that to be fascinating is because this is a globally acclaimed horror film, and although it differs depending on the market it fell into, people across the entire globe still align that it is one of the best films of horror in general. Despite facing difficulties with various national censorship boards, in the United States it was released unrated to improve its commercial prospects after it was given an X by the Motion Picture Association of America.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And in Britain, it was liable for seizure during the 1980s Video Nasties Moral Panic. The film still proved to be a major success at the box office, grossing $66 million worldwide against its estimated budget of $640,000.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. In 2008, it was chosen by Empire Magazine as one of the 500 greatest films of all time, along with Night of the Living Dead. Its success in then West Germany earned it the Golden Screen Award, given to films that have at least 3 million admissions within 18 months of release. Rotten Tomatoes reports that 94% of 47 surveyed critics gave the film a positive review. The average rating is 8.6 out of 10. And the site's critical consensus reads, "One of the most compelling and entertaining zombie films ever, Dawn of the Dead perfectly blends pure horror and gore with social commentary on material society." Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times gave it 4 out of 5 stars and proclaimed it one of the best horror films ever made. While conceding Dawn of the Dead to be gruesome, sickening, disgusting, violent, brutal, and appalling, exactly like I like my horror movies, Ebert said that nobody ever said art had to be in good taste. That is my first Dawn of the Dead.
That was a lot of stuff.
I know. I came prepared.
I didn't come
with that. That's incredible.
Yeah. John, you awake?
Yeah, I am. I was actually riveted the entire time. I was engaged. Okay, I was good. There.
Look at this.
There you go.
Okay, so my next one is Scream 4. This is the one from 2011.
Let me just say to our guest, Sidney Prescott, it's an honor. Beyond Jamie Lee Curtis, forget Linda Blair. I mean, this is the ultimate.
Thanks, I guess. You film your entire high school experience and, what, post it on the net?
Everybody will be doing it someday, Sid.
It's kind of the one component the killer is missing.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, if you want to be the new version, the killer should be filming the murders.
Yeah, it's like the natural next step in a psycho-slasher innovation. I mean, you film them all real time, and then before you get caught, you upload them into cyberspace.
Making your art as immortal as you. Not to implicate him.
So who do you think is behind the murders?
Well, it's a stab fanatic, clearly. Working on less of a shriekle and more of a screamake.
Copyright attorneys, by the way.
Because all there are now are remakes. Only horror the studio's greenlight. I mean, there are still rules, but the rules have changed. The unexpected is the new cliche.
Yeah, you gotta have an opening sequence that blows the doors off, dial up some flashy music video direction, and the kill's gotta be way more extreme.
Modern audiences get savvy to the rules of the originals.
The film takes place on the 15th anniversary of the original Woodsboro murders and involves Sidney Prescott returning to the town after 10 years, where Ghostface once again begins killing students from Woodsboro High. Like its predecessors, Scream 4 combines the violence of the slasher genre with elements of black comedy and whodunit mystery to satirize the cliches of film remakes. The film also provides commentary on the extensive usage of social media and the obsession with internet fame, which has not gone away in 10 years.
It kind of was ahead of its time, honestly.
It was. You know, actually, there was a piece of trivia in here that many have credited this film with foreshadowing the effects of social media on today's youth and the extreme lengths that they go to achieve internet fame. So to your point, Aaron. Mm. But it received praise for the performances, direction, and humor, although it was criticized for its lack of scares and reliance on cliched formulas. But it also makes a mockery of cliches, and it kind of puts it on its head in that way. Many consider it to be an improvement over its predecessor and has enjoyed several positive reappraisals since, particularly for its examination of the impact of social media. Mm. It was released in 3,305 theaters on 4,400 screens and grossed over $1 million in just its midnight previews. In its first weekend worldwide, the film took $37.3 million from 30 territories, behind only Rio, which I thought was fascinating, which took $53.9 million from 62 territories. So it was pretty close, but had less. The film tapped the box office in the United Kingdom, taking over $2 million, came in second in France, third in Mexico, and fourth in Australia. Scream 4 won the award for Best Horror Movie. Ghostface came in third place for Best Villain at the Virgin Media Movie Awards and was nominated for a Teen Choice Award for Best Horror Movie.
Well, if you got the Teen Choice Awards,
hey,
in
look,
here.
We don't get Whoa, any. We don't get any awards for horror movies anywhere else. All right.
Silence of the Lambs says no, that's not right.
Oh, that's true. All right, so I'm gonna go to, I guess, soon to be Ho North, Troy. What's your pick between Dawn of the Dead and Scream 4?
Dawn of the Dead.
Easy enough.
he's like, I got no commentary.
Scream 4 is okay. It's fine for a sequel. It's just screamed out at that point. Like, Dawn of the Dead is still such a better movie, better crafted classic.
I feel you. John?
I'm going to concur with my soon-to-be North counterpart and say that, yeah, Dawn of the Dead is a much better movie and Scream 4 does not do nearly as much, as I can tell by the fact that I was paying attention to everything you were saying about Dawn of the Dead. And then I completely zoned out and started looking for apartments when you were talking about Scream 4.
Damn!
So you have that's a good indicator of how well you're doing. Also, I'm a little jealous that I did not put this kind of effort into anything. Good job, Amanda.
Thank you. Also, I'm not going to take it personal that you were looking at stuff. I'm going to blame it just on the movie, not me.
Okay.
Aaron?
Well, number one, John, you've had plenty of time to do some research for it before you get there. Like, we're almost to you. You got time. You could have been doing that instead of apartment shopping. Just saying.
I'm sorry. Were you saying something?
Yeah, no, not at all. Number two, my vote doesn't count, but I would probably go Dawn of the Dead too. Scream 4 is, I think, it is a great movie though. I wish they would have
kept with the alternate ending.
Kept with the original idea that, you know, Sydney died and she got away with it, because I think that would have been freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I know it would have sucked for fans, but on the same token, that's how you push the envelope. That's how you push the envelope.
So just so everyone listening knows, who doesn't know, if you've seen the ending, or I guess if you don't care about the ending, instead of Jill, which is Sydney's cousin, dying at the end of the movie, the alternate ending was that Sydney would die.
They gave the impression that she dies,
yeah,
and that she got away with it.
And that Jill gets to continue, and essentially it was supposed to create a new trilogy set. With Jill kind of leading it. But if Sydney still survives and Jill survives, it's not going to, you know, it takes away from that cliffhanger.
Still. All right. So Dawn of the Dead moves to the next round, because in this round,
no surprise,
only three votes count. But in the next round, all votes count. And the poll that we originally took in the Facebook group, that's going to settle any ties. Okay. So here we go. My first movie is Army of Darkness.
Yeah. All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up. See this? This is my boomstick! It's a 12-gauge double-barreled Remington. S-Mart's top of the line. You can find this in the sporting goods department. That's right, this sweet baby was made in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Retails for about $109.95. It's got a walnut stock, cobalt blue steel, and a hair trigger. That's right. Shop smart. Shop S-Mart. You got that?
Okay, Ash has been sent to the past, 1300 AD to be exact, and he manages to bring hell on earth with him. He quickly gains favor with the locals, but just as fast, he unleashes an undead army upon them all. He's selfish, studly, and also the coolest anti-hero to ever grace the horror scene. He's played by Bruce Campbell, one of the greatest of all time. Now, Evil Dead 2 is probably the most well-made of the Evil Dead films. It definitely looks better than Army of Darkness. It's also clever, funny, artistic, visceral, but it's just not as fun as Army of Darkness. I wait on this for so long. But the truth is, I saw Army of Darkness probably, well, multiple times in the theater, and probably 100 times since then. Countless times at home. Both of my kids were legally required to watch it, or they didn't get to go to driver's ed. I'm pretty sure that was the deal. It's the most quoted movie I think of in my personal history. This is my boomstick. All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up. Groovy, lady, you got real ugly. And of course, hail to the king, baby. I didn't say they were nice things, but in terms of quoting a movie with friends, Army of Darkness is right there at the top. I've said in our, we had a bad movie night for Army of Darkness, which I don't think is out yet, but it will be coming out soon. And I said in that, it's a friend qualifier. If you drop one of those quotes and somebody knows what that quote refers to, I instantly give them a chance to be my friend because it matters. It makes a difference. This is a film that doesn't need to be shot perfect. It doesn't need to be written sharply. It doesn't need to have Oscar caliber acting. It's just freaking good, cheesy fun. It's a throwback to horror films of the 50s and 60s. I don't believe horror has to be consistently scary. I just have to enjoy it. And I love Army of Darkness. And I will add, because I want to compliment on Amanda's research, Army of Darkness made $4 in its entire theatrical run.
$4 whole.
I think that was the number. Nobody saw it in the theater but me and my friend Felicia that went with me. It just did not do great in the theater, but it's had an enormous impact on home video. And there is an alternate ending if you can find it for the director's cut. So that's Army of Darkness. My second film is Blade 2.
Hey, me and the gang were wondering.
What was that?
Can you blush?
Here we go, Bob.
Oh, I get it. I see now. You've been training for 2 years to take me out. And now here I am. It's exciting, isn't it?
Now, Blade 1 and 3, you could probably qualify as action movies, right? I mean, they're kind of action horror. But Blade 2 is straight up horror. Guillermo del Toro delivered what is probably the best all-around Blade. I would say, as a whole, it's the best all-around Blade film. One of the best fight scenes in the series with the Club Hell scene, if you can remember that one. The entire plot centers around Blade having to work with the vampires to bring down Nomak, a next-generation souped-up vampire that threatens the existence of all man and vampire kind. Blade somehow cures Whistler. He hitches up with Norman Reedus and a gaggle of vamps who include a very badass Ron Perlman as Reinhardt. And the film is absolutely horrific. It's bloody, terrifying, and it's vicious representation of the Reapers. The final battle is ass-kicking and brutal and also kind of sad. Somehow critics gave this only a 57% on Rotten Tomatoes, which feels like a real stretch that anyone wouldn't enjoy Blade 2. But it also just proved that some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill.
I love that. I love that you chose two movies that are so incredibly quotable.
Because that's what a great movie is. It isn't just, well, artistically, this is... I want to enjoy it. And those two movies are the most fun I've had in the horror sequel genre. So I will go to Amanda first. Between Army of Darkness and Blade 2.
Yo, she bitch. I'm going with Army of Darkness.
All right. John, what do you got?
Yeah, this is no contest. Army of Darkness.
Jesus, that was easy. Troy, it doesn't matter what you think, but we'll listen.
That's right, but I'll throw my backbone into Army of Darkness as well.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to have a zombie off. Okay, so that's Ho North. Now we're going to go to Ho South. John, what are your movies?
I'm going to have to disappoint everyone with the complete lack of research and just go off of my feelings because my feelings matter.
Can I ask, research is not that hard to do, man. It takes you 10 minutes.
I stole my stuff from Wikipedia.
See?
Yeah. I looked some stuff up on Wikipedia and I was like, that shit's not interesting. Let me make up stuff.
Okay.
Anyhow.
All right.
I'm going to start with my very first movie. My very first movie is Dr. Sleep.
Mom and I, we never wanted to see snow again. So we lived in Florida, tiny place, but it was comfortable and we were happy. I was 20 when she died. And back then, I saw, when someone was going to die, I saw flies, black flies, death flies, I called them, circling people's faces. And in those last weeks, she was covered, her whole face. I could barely see her eyes. And I tried to comfort her, but I could hardly look at her. And she saw that. Maybe something warm to push away such unpleasantries.
Don't you want to hear about it? She was your wife.
I think you've mistaken me for someone else.
Now, there is a lot of different reasons why I chose Dr. Sleep, but the primary reason actually happens to be
Rebecca
Mike
Ferguson.
Flanagan.
Oh, sorry.
That it's better, that it's better than The Shining?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Mike Flanagan. Mike Flanagan took a movie that Kubrick gave us, and I had heard years upon years about how wonderful The Shining movie was until I finally saw it when I was like 40 or something. And I was not impressed. However, Dr. Sleep takes everything from that movie and creates something completely all its own, and at the same time elevates the hot garbage that is Kubrick's opus to horror.
Okay? Are you trying to turn Aaron on with these words?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude, I know. Sexual.
Literally just say The Shining sucks and you hate Kubrick and I am all over you.
Right. I know what I'm doing.
And Rebecca Ferguson.
And Rebecca Ferguson. So
I didn't even need that. I didn't even need it. The Kubrick and the Shining hate was good.
Oh, I was trying to give you a three-way for your birthday, Aaron. That's what it was.
Happy birthday to you.
So one, Mike Flanagan does prove that you can take hot garbage and make something beautiful out of it. Ewan McGregor can sell just about anything. He creates a role that was nothing, and he creates a wholly entire person out of this role, and it's actually very well done. And of course you have Rebecca Ferguson. I'm gonna finally say it, because while I do love her, she proves that even the worst of people can get me to see their way, and I will follow her everywhere.
She's a
just
great villain.
Hopefully not in alleys.
As this character, not as
no, I'll go in the alley with her.
Don't follow her though. Don't follow her in the alley.
No, I'd go.
Yeah. I'd die happy. Mm-hmm. And that was my first movie. My second movie is Aliens.
So this service tunnel must be how they're moving back and forth.
That's right. It moves from the processing station right into the sub-level here. Come down on that. Okay, come over. Go back. Okay, punch that in right there. No, it's back here.
Well, there's a pressure door at this end. Couldn't we put one of the remote sensor units in the tunnel and then seal that door?
Yeah, that'll work, but we gotta figure on them getting into the complex.
That's right. So, we repair the barricades at these two intersections.
Right.
And weld plate steel over these ducts here and here and here. That way they can only come at us from these two corridors.
All right, then we put the other sentry units here and here, right?
Right.
Outstanding. Then we need a deck of cards.
Game over, man!
All right, so what can be said about this Alien sequel? Well, one of the things it does very well is it decides to throw everything out from the original movie, that in the way of it doesn't want to do a rehash of all the different scares the original movie does, and it creates something that is not only scary but also thrilling. The first movie does something fantastic by introducing us to these characters, but also that movie can really only be watched once and still have the same effect. Beyond that, it doesn't have the same effect of fear or anything else. This movie, on the other hand, lets you have that fear in the first couple of viewings. But after that, it becomes just something that is a fun, enjoyable ride. And it understands exactly what it's doing. It's taking you on a wild trip to expand a world in which these aliens live in. Also, this movie does an awesome job of solidifying the fact that Sigourney Weaver is a badass. She has always been a badass. She deserves to be a badass. And I get the weirdest boner every time I see a chick with a flamethrower.
Jesus. Okay.
And that was Aliens. So I am going to throw it to my friend Troy and find out which one of these two phenomenally awesome movies he feels is going to win.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting because The Shining and Alien both are like quintessential like film must watch for its craft and what it brought to the table. And both of these sequels actually make the franchises better. Sadly, we're not going to get the third part of the Dr. Sleep saga, which is really sad. Aliens, however, is just on a whole other level compared to what its first movie was. And I think that's why I have to shift that to be the better sequel, because it was just so much more enjoyable, so much more rewatchable. The lines are better. The acting is great. airlocks, all of it. When you use some of the actual footage from this movie as the ending for Conker's Bad Fur Day on the Nintendo 64, you know that this movie has literally solidified itself in the zeitgeist. So, aliens for sure.
Amanda?
For similar reasons to what Troy mentioned, but also Ripley is just such a badass that it's hard not to go for my leading lady.
All right, Aaron, nobody gives a shit, but go ahead.
Well, I will say, Rose the Hat, that's Rebecca Ferguson's character in Dr. Sleep.
It's so good.
One of the best villains of the last few years.
For sure.
Sincerely. She's fantastic. I don't think Ewan McGregor is even close to her level in the movie. That's probably the only reason I don't rate it a little higher. But it's still, she just makes that movie, man. She's just wonderful. But seriously, when you put the two together, you're talking one of the most classic films of all time. Aliens is an all-time classic. It established James Cameron as a guy you don't mess with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get away from her, you bitch. Sigourney Weaver, how they created, well, number one, they as the I believe the first Oscar nomination for a female action lead, which was awesome. And the fact that they had her become this action hero, because in the first one, she's kind of just, she's smart and capable and resourceful, but not really an action badass. Here, she's an action badass.
Mm-hmm.
And they allowed her to also be feminine in the movie, which I thought was a really nice turn. And a lot of that came from Sigourney Weaver saying that, you know, to make certain choices and twists, especially with Newt, that whole motherhood bond that they had. And I just loved it. Plus Michael Biehn and Bill Paxton. And it's just, it's a classic. Now, there's a lot of movies in here in this whole list that I enjoy more than Aliens. But in terms of just these two, Aliens by a mile. But it doesn't matter what I think. So next.
Okay.
Troy, what are your two? Troy has a tough one as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, my first one, I had a hard time picking myself. My first one is A Quiet Place 2.
Hey.
Hey, what was that?
I don't know what that was.
I'm going to take the kids home. Okay.
Okay, yeah. My truck's up on Main Street. So.
Okay. All right, everybody in. Let's go. Okay. Straight home. Lee.
All right. Yeah. Good. Your brother say anything going on at the base?
Nothing I know of. Just call. Let me call him back.
All right. Yeah, let me know.
Following the deadly events at the Abbott family home from the first movie, they must now face the terrors of the outside world as they continue their fight for survival in silence. Forced to venture into the unknown, they quickly realize that the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats that lurk beyond the sand path. Quiet Place expands on the first movie, and without the man that made it happen, and does exactly what it should do as a sequel. It ups the danger, grows the characters into the next phase of themselves post events of the first film. The film also grows the alien characters as well as to what they can or can't do and how they arrived in the first place. Everything a sequel should do to help launch a franchise, Quiet Place 2 was so down the line that Quiet Place 1 and 2 could have actually been one long 3-hour movie and it would have worked brilliantly. It does all of this too with a cast of kids in Noah Jupe and Melissa Simmons that really, really carry the movie of their own. What makes it a worthy follow-up is the same precise use and disuse of sound. The boundary between the screen and the audience disappears in the silence. The film's budget was actually 3 times bigger than the size of the first film. The development started on the sequel straight after the first film opened to excellent box office numbers. And described as a classic horror film by the revered film director William Friedkin in a tweet dated May 29th, 2021. The tweet ended with, "Cinema is back." And that is Quiet Place. Part 2. My second movie is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors.
We're the Dream Warriors.
Acting school?
Not in the beginning. I started on a talk show, you know.
But when a young actress says, how do you succeed in this business? You don't always say you have to study.
I think you should study. Study, work, and then maybe you can make it.
Can I ask you something?
Certainly.
Who gives a fuck what you think?
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. Fuck the prime time, bitch.
During a hallucinatory incident, young Kristen Parker, played by Patricia Arquette, which is her first movie, yes, this is her on-screen debut, has her wrist slashed by the dream-stalking monster Freddy Krueger, played by Robert Englund. Her mother, mistaking the wounds for a suicide attempt, sends Kristen to a psychiatric ward, where she joins a group of similarly troubled teens. One of the doctors there is dun-dun-dun, Nancy Thompson, who basically battled Freddy in the first movie, because no one talks about the second one. Nancy senses a potential in Kristen to rid the world of Freddy once and for all. What many feel is the real sequel to the original. This mixes the scare of the first movie and adds some kick-assery in the third. Nancy makes this a true follow-up since she was in the first movie, and I also think this was a great way to continue the Freddy franchise without going to the well the exact same way. Mm-hmm. This actually showcases the concepts of mental health and how a group can actually support one another and help you overcome that mental health aspect. The reason why it's a great sequel is because on the VHS release that you can get at anywhere but Blockbuster, the music video for Dokken's Dream Warriors appeared after the credits. The video actually contains many scenes from the movie and ends when the band vanquishes Freddy, causing him to wake up from his nightmare and ask, who were those guys? For 1 week during the filming, Robert Englund is the shit because he was working 24 hours every day for a consistent week because he was wrapping up filming on his television series downtown and then would report to a Nightmare on Elm Street 3 set at nighttime. So the fact that he was able to play Freddy as well as he did during that week is amazing. And plus, as already mentioned, this is the film that gave us the debuts of Patricia Arquette and, of course, the lovely Jennifer Rubin.
Feels illegal. He wasn't allowed to sleep.
I'm sure he got some sleep in there. They get trailers.
Yeah. He's not working the entire 24 hours chasing people with razor knives.
You don't know that.
I would if I was him. I'd be in the mall and just run around. Yeah.
Aaron. Freddy! This one's a complicated one, so we're going to come to you, Mr. Film Critic.
Oh, me?
First. Yes.
Wow. It's hard. I actually like Nightmare on Elm Street 4 better than 3, but...
Also a good film.
Yeah, also a good film. I mean, but yeah, rocking with Dokken. I mean, that's kind of hard to not rave about that. Well, two things. One, Quiet Place 2, fantastic sequel. I think I almost like it as much as the first movie, legitimately. I think it, and God, Cillian Murphy is so good in that movie. This is a tough one. Like I said, when I started, this is the toughest one, I think, of all of them for me to choose from. I just feel like A Quiet Place 2, it has a little bit of that recency bias because it wasn't too long ago. Mm-hmm. But I can still remember a lot of the scenes in Nightmare on Elm Street 3. You know, I remember the, was it Jennifer Rubin who was the addict and had the veins just basically on her arm?
Yep.
And the head twisting.
The head twisting, the welcome to prime time bitch, and throws her in the TV, which I don't understand. How do you not know that that's like not a suicide? How did you jump into the TV? That's just a weird thing that the orderly just ignores.
The tendons.
Yeah.
Ripped up. Oh, yeah. That was tendons. Really cool.
I'm going to have to go with Nightmare on Elm Street 3 for multiple reasons, but I just want to say I don't discount A Quiet Place 2. I think that's a great choice. I'm glad you didn't pick It Chapter 2, which is what I thought you were going to pick, Troy, and that would have made easier choice because I don't think that's a great sequel. No. But
It Chapter 2 would have fallen.
Yeah,
hard.
A Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Freddy is one of those characters where I don't love the later movies. I think it got too jokey, too cheesy, and everything else. But I do love Nancy's sacrifice in this one. It's great that her character got some return to the forefront because I do think Freddy's Revenge was not good. So this was a return to the scary of the franchise. You got Dokken, cool video. But Freddy is just also, you know, that right blend of horror and cheese. So I'm going to go with Elm Street 3.
I'm going to go John next just because Amanda stole my Conjuring 2 from earlier. And I'm a petty bitch.
Well, damn. So I really liked A Quiet Place too. Much like Aaron, I believe that it holds up very well especially in comparison to the first movie. A lot of the acting in it is amazing, and it's infinitely rewatchable as a film. However, Dream Warriors was my introduction to Freddy Krueger for some reason. That movie holds a very special place in my heart. I think that a lot of the things that I love about it have to do with the fact that everyone was trying to work together and work together in their dreams. And I'm going to have to go with Nightmare on Elm Street.
And Amanda, for fun.
Well, yeah, just for fun. I also would have gone with the third Nightmare on Elm Street, mostly because I feel like for a sequel to be superior to its original and for it to continue to be something that stands out, it has to do something new and creative. And as much as I do like A Quiet Place Part 2, I don't feel like there was that much that was new and unique to it. It played on the same techniques that it used in the first. Whereas this third Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy as a character even changes a little bit. He's more quippy and he has one-liners after his kills. The effects of those kills are insane. They look wonderful and they're very creative there too. I mean, the concept alone is definitely unique and interesting for Dream Warriors. So
it was nice how they combined mental health and like,
yeah.
These kids are basically, they're not killing themselves, but you get why they would think that, you know?
Yeah. And it's all around, it has a more well-rounded story in terms of trying to create something more progressive and not returning to the wheel. I think, Troy, to your point, when you were actually talking about A Quiet Place Part 2, it feels
you
more
mean
like it's...
The well, not the wheel.
What did I say?
You said the wheel.
Oh, okay.
But the wheel goes round and round.
The wheel does go round and round. But on the bus. But to Troy's point, you mentioned that it's kind of like a continuous movie. And so for me, for it to feel superior, or to feel like it's a betterment from the original, it has to not only continue the story, but do something different with it. And so that's why I would go with the third Nightmare on Elm Street, if
both
it matters.
Good choices. But Nightmare on Elm Street 3 wins.
Yes, it does. And now we have
Dream Warrior.
We have our North and our South. So you guys ready to battle this out and figure out which one's the winner?
Let's do it.
Remember,
sure. Let's do
all
it.
All ties are settled by the poll. So we'll go back to the listener poll if we have a tie.
Groovy.
Ho North, semifinal. Dawn of the Dead versus Army of Darkness. It is the most serious zombie movie ever versus not the most
not
serious zombie movie ever. Army of Darkness or Dawn of the Dead, Amanda?
This is tough, but it's also not tough because Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, Army of Darkness, it's more than just the, for me personally, this is a personal opinion, I like that there's something more than the serious nature to Dawn of the Dead. Now, there is so much to be said that I didn't even touch on for that film. And I know it was my pick and it still is one of the best horror films of all time.
It's great.
But I personally would choose Army of Darkness as a rewatch just because I enjoy that humor and the quippiness of it. And Bruce Campbell alone just brings joy to my soul.
We learned this from the Bad Movie Night, which please go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider and you'll see it. You'll hear it soon. But we learned that this was the first and last lead in a studio film for Bruce Campbell. The only time he ever led a studio film.
Oh.
Everything else was independent. Fun fact.
Love that for him.
All right. So Amanda says Army of Darkness moves on. Troy?
Hey, Dawn of the Dead. You ain't leading anything but two things right now. Jack and shit. Army of Darkness all the way.
All right.
Okay, don't shit on Romero's film, though.
That was funny. John?
No contest. Army of Darkness.
Okay.
I wish we could have recorded the way he did that because he was, like, so suave about it. He just looked, he tapped his unmute button, and he said, no contest. And he just tapped it again with, like, a little bit of sass to him, sassafras.
Hey, calm down. If you keep going, we're going to hose you down, babe. All right?
Jesus. All right. Well
done.
One more time. Hail to the King, baby. It's a clean sweep. Army of Darkness. I don't think it's close, personally, for me. Okay. So now we go to Ho South, where we have Aliens versus A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. Now, I will mention, Aliens doesn't have a Bitchin' Dawkins on, so it's got that going against it. But what do you say, John? Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or Aliens?
Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Really?
Yeah,
you went against your own pick.
I really did. I mean, I really love Aliens, but like, I wanted to grow up to become Freddy Krueger, so you can take that however you want.
Please clip your nails.
Multiple ways.
Please clip your nails.
You know, Freddy Krueger, he had all the great lines. You know, nobody can outsmart him. And even if he did, he almost killed you anyway. So he's one of the best and scariest movie monsters ever made.
All right. Troy Heinrichs.
Oh, that's easy. Dream Warriors. Like, I played Dream Warriors on repeat. It's so good.
Wow. All right. Amanda?
So I have to say that I feel like if we're talking about quality, I do think that Aliens.
I want to stop you. It's whatever you rate as the best.
I know, but I'm getting there.
Okay, all right.
Sorry. But I feel like most people are going to think about it in terms of the quality, and by most standards, Aliens would probably take that. And don't get me wrong, I love Ripley, and I love, like I said, having that powerful female lead. But I just enjoy Nightmare on Elm Street 3 more. And again, to go back to my comments before and kind of what Aaron said, too, it's not just a horror movie. It interjects a lot of social commentary, too. And it was a more clever and unique idea. And it was before Freddy got very cheesy and campy in a bad way. So this is, you know, Freddy was my nightmare growing up, and not much scared me. I had always been scared of Freddy Krueger from the first Nightmare on Elm Street until I saw the remake by What's-His-Face. And then I learned not to fear him because that movie was so shitty. But yeah, I definitely have to go with Dream Warriors.
Wow.
Jackie Earl Haley.
Yeah, Jackie Earl Haley.
So, I always wanted Mr. Rogers to wear a black and red striped sweater one time.
That means that Nightmare on Elm Street 3 beat Aliens, because that's 3-1.
Yeah.
What would you have picked, though?
I would have picked Aliens, probably.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just because the Cameron effect, the Sigourney Weaver effect, I do love that relationship between her and Newt. But I will be perfectly honest. I like them both, but I probably would watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3 before I would watch Aliens again. So I think I probably got caught up in the whole, well, it's considered one of the best movies of all time versus, well, what do you enjoy more, Aaron?
See, and that's what I was saying. Yeah, is a lot of people, I think,
you know,
listening to
talking
it are
myself
gonna...
out of it. I, Elm Street 3, yeah, because I probably would, no, and I definitely would watch Elm Street 3 before I would watch Aliens. I like the Aliens movies. I don't love them. Right. I don't love any of them. Right. I love the first one, probably.
And which of those two actually performs better as the sequel of the first one?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, I got to tell you, for me, this is going to be the easiest freaking decision I've ever made. But the finals, whole finals.
Do we have to actually go through with this?
We have to go through with this. It is Army of Darkness versus Nightmare on Elm Street 3 for the title of the best horror sequel of all time. We've already gotten rid of Aliens. We've gotten rid of Blade 2. We've gotten rid of Dr. Sleep. Well, that's kind of new. We've gotten rid of A Quiet Place too. A lot of other movies didn't.
Got rid of Dawn of the Dead.
We got rid of Dawn of the Dead.
That's important to note.
Didn't even mention that one. There's some other ones that were mentioned. Hellraiser 2 was left out. Evil Dead 2 was left out of this. Mm. These are from listener picks. It Chapter 2 was on there. I don't think that should have been on there. And there's some Halloween 3 Season of the Witch somehow made the list, which I thought was interesting. But I would say that is probably the most unique horror sequel. And it has
I'll give you that
song that everybody hates but also kind of loves. Happy, happy Halloween, 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 happy, happy Halloween.
Yeah, that one is pretty interesting because it takes everything about the Halloween movies and says, we don't care.
It says, we don't care. Truly.
They did.
Truly.
They did. Oh, so you love Michael Myers? Great. We're not going to have him here. Okay. Do you love slasher movies? We're not going to do that at all. No, no. Do you love Halloween masks that make your face turn into worms? No, man. Nobody cares about this. We're going to make a whole movie about that. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
Okay.
It's going to mean everything to you. And we're going to have that guy that stars in all the horror movies that are terrible. We're going
to
have him.
Don't
in
they
it.
Not connect those back to the rest of them to this one too? Am I thinking of the right one?
Actually have the Silver Shamrock masks in Halloween Kills.
Okay.
But they don't connect.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Now you're just pissing me off for no reason.
Well, they're just there as a nod to that Halloween movie. Well, that's all.
They also have Jamie Lee Curtis in, they have Laurie Strode in some of them, and she's died like twice in this freaking franchise, and she's still going. I don't know.
She's a cat. She's got 9 lives.
She's literally Michael Myers herself. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why this works.
We got to settle this one. So We've got Army of Darkness versus Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, John.
Like there's a contest here. All right, let me try to fake it. Well, you know, I could always make it about Freddy Krueger. No, I can't even do that. It's Army of Darkness.
Okay. Amanda.
This is very easy for me as well, Army of Darkness. We love us some Bruce, baby. We love us some Bruce.
Troy. I think it's going to be harder for Troy.
Klaatu, Barata, Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Oh.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious. Because, yeah, here's why.
I figured that might be a possibility.
Here's why.
Okay.
So, when you think...
First of all, it's Troy's.
When you think of Army of... It is.
He can't be wrong about anything.
Also true. Army of Darkness, if you did not know anything about Army of Darkness, you would not know it was a sequel to anything. And this is voting for the best sequel horror movie.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I agree with that.
If you're coming in blind, you could say Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is a sequel. Army of Darkness is just like a standalone movie because there's no reference really to the past stuff at all.
The whole opening is a entrance.
Not if you've seen it before.
The whole opening comes from the second movie.
I'm aware where it comes from because I've seen the second movie. I'm saying
right.
I'm going to finish this thought here.
I think what you're missing is that
Let's place bets. I want to place bets.
Is the opening make it a sequel or not? The answer is yes. Is the opening needed? No.
You just got mansplained, Troy.
Well, I think his point of the fact that the opening isn't even needed means that it didn't even need the first two movies, meaning this could stand alone, making Nightmare on Elm Street 3 the better sequel, which has proved my point. Thanks, John.
You just got Troy-splained, John.
We agree just now that the movie can stand alone, but it doesn't change the fact that it's a sequel.
It still uses core principles from the earlier.
Core principles and the mathematics that are used in the equation of the quadratic lining of this whole movie makes it a sequel.
Kind of like they do in the movie.
John, give me some sugar, baby.
Troy, I think more importantly, all that matters is that what you just said doesn't matter because we already know what Aaron's choosing.
I haven't selected yet. And I want to go back to Troy because he didn't get to finish his thought for his explanation as to why.
No, I just think Dream Warriors was like a quintessential sequel where it's Nancy coming into the next movie. It's Freddy coming into the next movie. It's Nancy and Freddy finishing their fight, where I think Army of Darkness is a great movie and it's definitely a continuation of the other two. It's also very much a very standalone movie. So anybody coming into the franchise wouldn't know it's a sequel unless they knew of the history. So from a pure what we're voting on perspective, I think Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is a better sequel of the franchise.
God, it's a good thing nobody asked you.
Also, it worked really great for my joke. That's why I picked it, all right? So shut up.
Okay, it did work for your joke. I hope you also picked it because you wanted to pick it. I would make the case that the best sequels function as sequels as well as standalone films.
Which Dream Warriors also does.
Preach.
Word.
Preach. Finger snaps.
And I think Dream Warriors is leading two things. Jack and shit. And that film just left town.
I already used that joke.
And it's still funny. I made it happen again. Groovy.
Finger snaps.
Army of Darkness is the winner. Yeah, baby! Honey, you got real ugly. That's a classic line. Oh.
I'm going to pick with you later, Aaron.
Okay, well, that's it. The winner. I wonder how many people are like Aliens fans and just mad. We don't treat it enough love. And that's what it sounds like when you're really mad about something.
You want to make me really mad?
That's also what Bruce Campbell sounded like when he was trying to say the
pronounce Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Yep.
Oh, that's amazing. I can't believe it. You know what? Who would have thought Army of Darkness would have won any award ever in the history of time?
Everybody, because it's that good.
For the Hollywood Outsider podcast, all of us ever, every
that's also
person
true.
Ever.
But do you want to know what the top three were from the listener poll?
Let's hear it.
Number one was Aliens.
So. Oh, wow. So we just pissed off a lot of people.
That just means they're wrong. Number two, Evil Dead 2. Evil Dead 2 was number two. Number three, Army of Darkness. How about that?
How about them apples?
Applesauce, bitch.
I saw that was coming. I was thinking it myself. I think that's a perfect way to get the frack out of here. That was from a sequel, too. Yay! All right, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Don't forget, you want to win a copy of Easter Sunday contests at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We've got some other contests coming up, including, I believe, some Top Gun Maverick, maybe. I don't know. We'll let you know. And another one, I believe Medieval. Maybe is the other one that might be coming up. So rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. That's a hint to keep listening for your chances to win. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This, Troy at Troy Heinrichs at Blacklist Expose and Presenting Hitchcock, which I do with him, as well as Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks for me. Remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater or sit comfortably on your couch watching one of these fantastic horror sequels this Halloween season, buy popcorn.
I do Westworld too, but I can do Hitchcock as well, I suppose, if you want me to.
Is that what I said?
You said Hitchcock twice.
God damn it. I don't know what I'm doing. Presenting Westworld. That's what we're going to change the name to.
It's time to do a mashup.